C2M. Number 3A.
Now, I said that the whole chapter is built up in the order of the days of creation with their subtones, and that layout of 3, 3, 5, 5, 4, 7, 7. Whereas we have seen that prayer and atonement were laid out always the seven main tones through the seven subtones, a 7x7 layout. And you can ask yourself, why is this different? Now, the reason is rather evident. Namely, we have seen that when we lay out a subject in the 7x7, then it is always that we use the numerals of infinity in order to explain a subject. That means the numerals of infinity are values that are infinite, values that are eternal, values that have an isness quality. They are. Whereas when we have the days of creation, then we see the build-up of the days of creation as a becoming process, something that is in evolution, in unfoldment, where the one leads to the two, the second day to the third day to the fourth day, until it reaches a climax and shows the climax in the seventh day. Therefore, they are days of creation. They are not days of isness. So we always have to see that in Christian Science we have qualities that are of the nature of isness. Other qualities are the nature of becoming. Just as we had here, when they are comparatives, we know that they are not eternal. They have not yet reached the superlative. Only when we reach the superlative, the final, the perfect, the eternal, then the days of creation become numerals of infinity. Now, this very subject, we have seen ranges from the point of mortality and mortal progeny up to the point where we see that God is the Father of all. Therefore, it is a becoming process, not an isness state of things, not the presentation of eternal facts that are and that have no evolution within themselves. So, as the subject of marriage is an evolving process, it is presented, therefore, also in that evolving process of the days of creation and in the layout of the days of creation. So this is the reason for the different use of the subtones. Also, it is quite interesting that all the chapters in the textbook have undergone terrific changes in the development of from the first edition to the last edition, except the chapter on marriage. The chapter on marriage is that one chapter that practically right from the start was more or less built up in the same way. Naturally, there are various changes in terms and so on, but it was already built up in that sense of the creative order, the Genesis order. All the other chapters are hardly to be compared anymore when you compare the first chapter, first edition with the last edition, except this one. And it may be, I don't know, it's a hypothesis, but it may be because Mrs. Eddy, as we know in the beginning, was very much studying constantly the days of creation and made voluminous notes for herself right after the discovery of Christian Science, voluminous notes on the 7 days of creation. And so I think thought must have been very well firm, very well rooted in the days of creation. So when she wrote that chapter, she could easily write it already in the right order. All the other chapters were never written in the final order. They had to be rewritten and exchanged, and until finally we had the layout as we have it today. Yes, that's as far as what I can say about the whole structure. And now we could really start with the text and see if we find these ideas that I have laid out, especially this morning, if we can find them in the text. That is, can we really find that we must have a unity with the synonymous term, and that that has an advancing, elevating effect on what? On the human race. So, we take the first main tone, mind, and we go along our epitomes as we have them in the epitome book and see how we can confirm those epitomes from the text. The main tone epitome reads that spiritual unity in mind. So we start out with qualities of mind. What are the qualities of mind through being law-abiding? That's my summary term for all what is in it. So you can see mind idea is law and therefore demands law-abiding. And that has an effect, namely it advances life, civilization, truth. And we see that marriage has a lot to do with civilization, that marriage has a lot to do with being wedded to the whole of mankind, so that not the individual alone is advancing, but that the whole civilization must advance. And we know that many civilizations on earth advance and then decay and are wiped out. Many of the high cultures are no more existent. I don't know exactly anymore how many out of 24 high civilizations, only about 18 or 19 have remained. 18 or 19 are swept away and only a few have now remained. So we can see we have here a terrific big question in view, namely that whole civilization must have a good foundation, that it must be built on something that is firm, and here she talks about law and law-abidingness. Therefore, I always try first to pinpoint, when I present the subject, the renderings that are in the text, so that we are true to the text, the renderings in the text that bring out that main tone of law and to abide by the laws. In this short few paragraphs that we have here on mind, you find renderings like the following, that we should subject ourselves to moral regulations. Can you see moral regulations are laws or considered as laws? Furthermore, that we should obey legal and moral provisions, that civilization rests on legal and moral provision. You can see clearly that she takes all, so to say, all three levels or all three degrees into account, the purely legal aspect, then the moral aspect, and then finally the spiritual aspect of law abiding, namely to keep the imperative commands, referring really to Moses' commands, which are considered moral laws, and therefore to be obedient or fidelity to a covenant. These are renderings that we find here, and I bring them out in order to show how I analyze a text, that I read that text and first listen what subject is in the center of the presentation, around which terms, around which tones really the text centers. And so here it is very easy to see that it always is about law and being law abiding. Naturally, we can see that she takes in all levels of law, from legal laws that are necessary, from moral laws that are necessary, from spiritual laws that are necessary. And we can say to ourselves that Mrs. Eddy has said that marriage is a legal provision and a moral provision for her time, and that was 100 years ago, and that she was indicating that finally when we reach science, that then we neither marry nor are given into marriage, then the moral and legal laws become subject to the spiritual laws, that the spiritual laws then become the laws and not the legal laws made by people, not the moral laws made for a certain time in a certain culture, defined by a certain religion and so on, constantly changing, constantly being something else. In every religion, the moral regulations are different than in other religion. In one culture, you have this regulation, in another culture, the very opposite regulation. We can see that they are not permanent, that they are not built on absolute Christian science. But you could see that as centuries go on, that there will be a higher sense of law and of law abiding. Now today we can see that even more clearly, where we begin to see that Christian science contains the laws of God, the spiritual laws. Christian science does not lay down legal laws nor moral laws, that legality and morality are only an effect of higher laws, and that the higher we go spiritually, the higher our legislation will be, and the higher our true morality will be, which is not the hypocritical morality, but the spiritual morality. So for us, we could say this very subject will tell us that in the measure that we obey higher laws, and always higher laws, like the laws of the days of creation. This is the law of creativity, of divine creativity. If you obey the laws of the commandments, the Beatitudes, the Lord's Prayer, if you obey the law of the word order, if you obey the law of the Christ order, if you obey the law of the Christianity order and science order, if we obey the laws of absolute Christian science, and if you obey the laws of divine science as it is being taught in class 4 about the levels and the laws in the levels and the level laws, so we can see that abiding by these higher laws, we certainly will be contributing to a higher civilization. So we must not just limit ourselves to that which was under consideration a century ago, but that Mrs. Eddy could show, and that's why we did take those few definitions about marriage, which were all indicating there comes a time when There is a wedding to higher concepts, to higher ideas. Finally, it's a wedding to God and to the laws of God. That therefore we must not only think about legal laws and the laws of Moses and moral laws, which are actually not that what helps progress today. So we read here the first paragraph that shows us mind as mind. In the epitome book I asked, now what does being law-abiding imply? So we ask a question about the main tone epitome, which says we should be law-abiding, and the subtones will have to answer what is meant by that. What is meant by being law-abiding? And so the subtones will show three different aspects of how to abide by law, or what is necessary. So under mind as mind, the answer is the necessity of submitting oneself to legal and moral regulations. That is the very first starting point, that which has proved itself to be good and a concession for the advancement of good in legal laws and in moral laws are something to be obeyed. But you can see very clearly that if we would make the legal laws and the moral laws eternal and permanent and say these are eternal laws, there would never have been a civilization. There would never have been an advancement in civilization. We would still believe and obey the laws of the Assyrians or the Chaldeans or of the Babylonians or of the Egyptians if a legal law, and they had legal laws and they had moral laws, if we would abide by them. And therefore we can see there must be an evolution. That therefore there must be an evolution, which very often comes through revolution, to see that legal laws are made by men, that moral laws are made by men and not by God. But legal laws and moral laws made by men can have a very high standard for the time being. But if we eternalize them, if we would eternalize the laws of Egypt or the laws of the Persians or the laws of the Assyrians, we certainly wouldn't have a free nation and a free civilization. So this is always the concessions. So again we come in and see the importance to see that everything that comes not from God and does not rest in God are concessions to the present age for the advancement of spiritual good. But they are concessions and therefore they are not eternal. Therefore we must grow spiritually, and as we grow spiritually we will change legislation. We'll change also our moral concepts and find that there are higher legal laws, that there are higher moral laws that we have to obey, and especially today in our century we'll see that we must have really a higher sense as well of legal laws as well as of moral laws. With that in mind, let's first see that standpoint of what Mrs. Eddy says, that, and I read here the paragraph starting with line 7, that marriage is the legal and moral provision for generation. She makes it very clear that it is the provision for generation and not for companionship, not for friendship. So marriage applies to the legal and moral provision. She doesn't speak about the spiritual provisions for generation among humankind. Now you can see she speaks about humankind. I always point out the principle life truths when they come up in the text, so that to enforce really the scriptural note. So here we have truth, the humankind. And then we have this very long sentence, which is fundamental to the whole chapter on marriage, where she starts out with until. So she says, look here, what I'm going to say now is only temporary. It's only until. It is nothing that has to do with an eternal law, with an eternal fact. And so she says, until the spiritual creation is discerned intact. Now, to discern that spiritual creation intact, that's a chapter on creation. That's the ninth chapter that shows that creation is intact. It is not the third chapter. So here we are in the third chapter, and shows until we come to that ninth chapter, creation, and the further chapter, until the spiritual creation is discerned intact, is apprehended and understood, and therefore God's kingdom, his kingdom, is come. As in the vision of the apocalypse. Now in the vision of the apocalypse, we remember that their marriage was the wedding of principle and idea. Love wedded to its own spiritual idea. It was that wedding of the Lamb's wife. Completely different marriage. That marriage feast. So until that comes, and that's the 16th chapter in the textbook. And then where the corporeal sense of creation was cast out. So the whole concept of mortal creation and progeny and so on, which is dealt with in this chapter, is then cast out. The concessions are then no more made. And its spiritual sense was revealed from heaven. So until then, marriage will continue. Subject to such moral regulations as will secure increasing virtue. So if we leave out what is interjected, we just can see that she says, until the spiritual creation is discerned intact, marriage will continue, and subject to such moral regulations as will secure increasing virtue. It is not subject to spiritual laws. It is not possible. A marriage is something human and is something material and is not spiritual. The spiritual marriage is, in John's revelation, indicated, and that does not need neither legal regulation nor moral regulation, because it's a spiritual wedding. So the side note also says marriage, temporal. Marriage is a temporal concept. It's not an eternal concept. We can have an eternal concept of marriage, but that marriage is something different than what is understood in common language as marriage. It's a unity, the spiritual unity of principle and idea. So we have here a first starting point, and says, well, until you learn something more, until you know and apprehend more about your spiritual unity with God, until then, you should really subject yourself to the legal provisions and to the moral provisions for marriage. So that's why we had here, we can understand now the epitome, and from time to time I just want to show that the epitomes that I've given are really just the core or pith of the text and not something different. So I had there the necessity of submitting oneself to legal and moral regulations. Then we come to the next subtone, namely to spirit, mind as spirit, and our epitome is, what does being law-abiding imply? It implies the command to keep the regulations pure. And you see the tone is of pure. Regulations, mind, that must be kept pure, spirit. You have a combination of mind and spirit. Laws to be kept pure. Today, naturally, we could see that we should keep the tonality of our laws pure. And as we have seen last week, those who have been here with the minor prophets and where we have taken the laws of the minor prophets, we could see that only if we keep those laws pure, that is, if we are really strict in keeping to the elements of a law, that only then really that law makes sense. Here we have concessions to be made, and so we have not the divine laws, but we have the moral and legal laws. Now we come to Moses' commandments, which afterwards were called laws. He never called them laws. It says, infidelity to the marriage covenant, that would be the counterfeit of principle, breaking that unity, breaking the unity in the covenant, but it's still on the human plane. It's nothing that has to do with the divine covenant. Infidelity to the marriage covenant is a social scourge for all races. And you see again, for all races. Again, she lifts it up right to races, not just for the marriage itself, for the relationship of husband and wife. We had on line 8, we had humankind. Now we have all races, and it gives an important indication that marriage is not something that has a value by itself, but that it is really just a symbol for a higher marriage, namely that it keeps the whole humankind, all the races, and afterwards civilization intact. It is that infidelity is the pestilence that walketh in darkness, the destruction that wasteth at noonday. The side note is fidelity required. Fidelity is what? Unity, principle. So unity is required, not infidelity, not breaking the unity, not breaking the covenant. And again, she says the commandment, again coming back to the Moses commandments, the commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, is no less imperative than the one, thou shalt not kill. You see, she refers really to those commandments that Moses gave, which were the second part. Those commandments which he gave for the relationship between man and man. Whereas the beginning of the commandments, the first seven great statements of the commandments, were all about the relationship between man and God. And then the rest, the seven other statements in the commandments, were all about the relationship between man and man. So she takes here only those commandments that are a concession, that have to do with humankind.